to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Lauren Rock, Bay Station Jacks. I'm Tom Ali. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up a paltry 50 cents. This is after last night, them being up like 14, 15. They were up as much as we were down on Friday, so it looked like it was going to be a wash. And it's washing the other way. We're flat now, but we sold off pretty good Friday night on the close. A lot of it had to do with the Chinese delegation going home, not going to Bozeman, maybe. What in God's name do you think the China delegation was going to do out in Bozeman? They're going to go to Yellowstone or someplace.
In Montana?
Well, where else would it be? Yeah.
No.
They decided not to go there, and they went home in a huff. So evidently the negotiations didn't go so hot, and Trump said he didn't care. So that was we sold off pretty good in the last 15, 20 minutes. As a matter of fact, if you weren't looking, we're down 159 in the Dow, 15 in the S&P, and 65 in the NASDAQ. But this morning, we were up all of that last night, and now we're not. So there you have it. We had sharp moves up in gold and in silver. Very interesting. I don't know. Is our buddy Joel still going to be with us, you think, after the Michigan fiasco, or has he reached for the short sword?
Well, I'm looking forward to talking to him tomorrow. I know he'll probably be a little depressed, but when they barely squeaked by Army at home, that was a telltale sign that they don't have things quite figured out up in Ann Arbor, and then Wisconsin just took it to them. I mean, it was 35-0 at the beginning of the third quarter, and then Wisconsin called off the dogs. Otherwise, I mean, they might have won that game like 56-7. You know, Michigan gets a couple of late touchdowns when, you know, everyone had backups in. So 35-14. Now, not surprised at all that Wisconsin won. The game was in Madison. Wisconsin's really good, and they're always really tough at home. But the way they won, I mean, it wasn't trick plays and punt returns for touchdowns and deep balls. It was just lining it up, I formation, running down their throat, and Michigan couldn't do anything.
Yeah, you know, the Irish are playing Wisconsin next year in Lambeau Field, of all places.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. I mean, is Lambeau Field as big as Camp Randall? I don't think so.
I can find out.
I'm gonna guess
I bet they're
no.
similar, but typically the college stadium is a little bit bigger. So we'll
I'm going to guess Camp Randall is pushing 90, and Lambeau's probably 75. Maybe not even that, maybe. All they care about is the people with the skyboxes in the pro stadiums.
Right.
They pay $2,000 a ticket. The other people, you know, it's worth 20 people. So they would rather have less people with more money, I'm thinking. And there's a lot of money in Wisconsin, especially the people. And what do you do if you have a skybox and you got the Milwaukee tickets? Are those guys?
So what were your guesses again?
I'm going to say Camp Randall's pushing 90 at least, because as college stadiums, all these college stadiums have been expanded.
Okay.
I'm thinking Lambeau is 70 to 75 max.
Okay. You're close on both, but they're actually almost the exact same size.
Really?
Lambeau is slightly bigger. Lambeau is 81,441.
They've expanded.
Yeah, they've expanded. But they're 81,441, and Camp Randall is 83,321.
Really?
So, yeah, Lambeau's about 1,500 more or 1,100 more.
They gotta be like the only one now. Is it almost pushing 100,000 in college?
Yeah, the Big Ten schools outside of Penn State and Michigan and Ohio State, those three all are, you know, well above 90, and a couple of them are above 100. The rest of them are all in the 70s and 80s.
Have you ever seen a picture of the Penn State Stadium through the years?
How many additions they've made?
Yeah, just incredible with how many additions. Finally, A&M, did they stop making additions finally and just build a new place, or did they make more additions?
I thought they were making more additions. I don't think they made a new place.
I don't think Penn State started out with anybody in the end zone. And, of course, then they think they doubled. I mean, it's amazing, the progress, I guess is what I call it, from that place in the last, you know, 40 years or whatever. Well, the Irish were 59, and now they're, what, 80, 81 or something? Now they can't really have trouble filling it, but The all these schools, no, I imagine yesterday's game, Wisconsin's full, but all these students go.
Well, if the Big Ten schools, I mean, Notre Dame, by the way, is 87-95.
Right.
So right in that same exact thing as Camp Randall. The Big Ten schools, you know, the big ones, they all sell out. I mean, Nebraska has sold out every game since, like, 1968.
Well, how many, I mean, if you've got 30, 40,000 students, or big, I mean, if they all go.
According to a quick Google search here, they have Big Ten stadiums and then capacity percentage. This is 2015 data, so a little old, but still probably pretty relevant. Michigan, 107,000 capacity, 100% capacity in 2015. Penn State, 106,000, 94% capacity. Ohio State, 105,000, and they were 102% capacity. Nebraska, 86,000, they were 103% capacity. Wisconsin, 80,000, they were 97%. Michigan State, 75,000, they were 100% in 2015. Iowa, 71,000, they were 90%. Then after that, it starts going down in capacity size and in attendance. Then you get into the Illinois, the Purdue's, the Indiana's, the Rutgers, the Maryland.
How big is Illinois?
Illinois capacity is 60,670.
There was a time, I mean, I'm going back a ways, that Illinois had more seats between the 20s than any other stadium in football, not just college or pro.
That could still be because that stadium goes really high up, and then there's nothing in the end zones, right?
And the upper deck has a huge overhang. We sat in the upper deck there. I thought they were terrific seats.
Yeah, I've only been to that stadium once, and the weather was miserable, so we didn't stay very long. But, yeah, there's barely any seating in the end zones, and then there's the huge upper deck on the sideline. But, of course, when we were there, there was no one there.
We had our buddy Freddie Wheaties, the Pershing broker, who stand next to me, was a massive Illinois fan. Not a fat guy. He was a big fan. And we used to go to a away game a year back in the day. And I don't know, I probably mentioned this story. We went down to Illinois a couple of times, and had a nice time. And one time, get a list, Matty. We were younger. We were playing. We went out on the field and played football for a while. Somebody brought a football. They let us. It was all artificial surface. They didn't care. We were out there playing. I mean, I imagine doing that at, you know, Notre Dame or Ohio State or someplace.
Yeah.
And we went to play at Ohio State. And this was. Or we went down there for a game. You know, I've never, you're Mr. Sports Bar guy. It was the first sports bar I think I've ever was in. It was in by Ohio State. And still to this day, it's the only one that had the technology that I've been in. Now, maybe you've seen them. They had probably 8 huge screens around the place, so you watch whatever game you wanted to watch. But at every table, there was a device in the middle. You could hit the button of the one you wanted to hear, and the sound would come out from that game. Just loud enough where the people at that table could hear, and you couldn't turn it up from there. I don't think I've ever seen that anywhere else.
I don't recall seeing that either, but I love it.
Oh yeah,
I think that's awesome.
Well, we flew down there, and it was, I don't know when I've seen it rain so hard. I mean, it was, well, we did here last week, but we land and it is, I don't know how the guy landed the plane, and it was we come off and it's leaking. The whole jetway is leaking as we're walking through the thing. We walk out and it's pouring, and there's no. There's like one cab, and there's 4 of us, and there's this other guy. Hey, can I share a cab with you guys? And he's like, eh. But, of course, I was the tallest dude. I wasn't the fattest guy. So I pile in the front seat, and these other guys all get in the back. And the new guy's sitting under her lap, right? So they're not happy until, as you know, you've met enough people on the trading floor. Not many people in the world know more about sports than those guys did. That's all I talked about all day. So... turns out this guy was going to be a referee for the next game, the game between Ohio State and Illinois. Of course, now it was everybody's idea to invite the guy in, right? and he talk about giving us a lecture on refereeing the whole way across the ways. I don't know if he's still doing it. For some reason, there's 3 guys that always work together in a team. This guy was from Wisconsin. He was a CPA. He did Big Ten football, and he said, I think it was the referee, the head linesman, and I think the back judge all worked as a team, and you filled in around them. I don't know why that would be. I don't know about refereeing, but those 3 guys really had to know how to work together, and the other guys you could sort of fill in. I know the referee's in the back, and he watches He watches what? The quarterback and the left tackle, right? And he's got the clock, and he watches anything that happens to the QB, correct?
That's right, yeah.
And doesn't the umpire watches the guys in the middle of the line, correct? And everything goes on in there, and doesn't the head linesman, he covers the right tackle on the line of scrimmage, he never leaves the line. Is that the story?
I think that sounds accurate, yeah.
And the line judge actually goes downfield with the passes, correct? Or in those days, I'm not sure they had a line judge. I don't think they did have a line judge in those days. It was a back judge and a field judge.
Okay.
So the guys you filled in would be the field judge and the field judge and the umpire. Do I have those all correct? I think I do.
I think you do too.
But they moved the umpire.
I think you know more about it than I do.
Well, they moved the umpire out of his spot, right? Because there we go. Those guys are getting clacked. The umpire used to stand right behind the middle linebacker. And I think now they move those guys somewhere else unless it's a third down or a fourth down play that's real important. Didn't they do that a couple years ago?
I have no idea.
Because once in a while, you'd see an umpire get clacked or people be pissed that one of the ends would run in them going across the field that might have been open or something. So I think unless it's a key play now, I don't know where they move them, off to the side or something. But he was the guy whose job it was to watch the interior line play. Like if the center was holding, it was always an umpire's call. That's what used to piss people off all the time. They really knew football. If a penalty came from a guy that it wasn't his call. You know who was a big referee forever was former Sheriff Sheehan.
Really?
When he used to be a member of the LaSalle Club, whenever I'd go there in the morning, the guy would run into me and we'd talk football for an hour and a half and then we'd shower up. Then went to work out. The guy loved refereeing. And he would
Those
say,
guys make any money?
I think they sort of do now. When he was doing it, I'm thinking no.
Like, I mean, obviously the NFL guys, it's like a full-time job, but not a full-time job, but they get paid as if it's a full-time job.
Yeah, I'm going to, you know what?
College guys, though, I don't know how much money they make.
You know what? I'll bet you could Google that. I'm going to say it's probably a couple of G a game now it's up to, but it's a big deal. The guys love it. They absolutely love it. It's like being an umpire. Guys love that too. But the guys from I talked for all night with John Tumpane, who's one of the major league umpires. Now he wasn't at the time, and he was saying he couldn't wait to get down to. Well, he's not going to go now. He used to love doing the Venezuelan league. He said all those guys cared about was playing baseball. Your job, just make the call. They didn't care. They ran off the field. Just make the call. Let's play. No instant replay. None of that stuff. He said, you know your baseball because there's no messing around. They get the ball. They throw it. By the way, Saturday's game. You can argue with me all you want, Mr. Weber, and you always have good points. That Saturday's game, what was it, 5 hours? Cubs?
The Cubs, I didn't watch it, but because I was
it was
at a
I left for Audrey's at 5:30, and I listened to the last inning on the radio. So 5:45 it got over?
Very well, yeah, very possible. So it was a 9-8 game? That could have went a long time.
Who's the big, tall, left-handed guy? Wick?
Yeah, he's one of them.
Guy's a pretty good pitcher.
He's one of the only guys I like.
What in God's name, why does the guy have to take his head off and wipe his face every single pitch?
I didn't know he did that.
He's...
But he probably does it to get the sweat on his fingers for grip. Zambrano used to do that all the time.
But he's, he was a solid... If there was no, he was a solid 35, 40 seconds between pitches. Every single pitch.
He can't be slower than Kimbrel is.
No. But Kimbrel's okay. He only pitches one or two pitches and they go out of the park.
Right.
Once you go to these relief guys, their speed, there wasn't one person I stopwatched probably 15, 20 pitches. There wasn't anybody. The fastest one was, who's the guy who's played for the Cubs? Fowler. Because he never leaves the box. So a lot of it's on the batter, but even he was 25, 26 seconds because he was ready right away. So even the relievers, but Manny, it's twice as much time between pitches as it ought to be. I mean, that's a long time for 9 innings. I mean, we're not even close to the 20 seconds. Some guys are over 40.
Yeah.
And we're just with nobody on base. I mean, it's not even like you're throwing a first or anything. Just sort of saying. Any chance of, I guess there is a chance of the last wild card. I mean, anything can happen. They could sweep the Pirates and the Cardinals could lose three in Arizona. Who knows? I mean, baseball is a weird game. But it's I couldn't believe it when Nick Kimbrell came in, though. I'm thinking, okay, I just came off the DL. You didn't have any spring training. The guy's been horrible. What makes you think today's going to be any better? Click, click, and it was over.
It was over. Well, the man doesn't have a lot of options. I mean, you got to pitch somebody. I mean, who would you pitch over him? I mean, now I'd probably pitch anyone over him. The Cubs went from a 90% chance of making the playoffs to they're right now at a 2.6% chance in a week. You know, based on their run differential and all these other factors, they should have absolutely been a playoff team, should have won a lot more games than they've won. But, you know, you lose six in a row, and the two teams ahead of you win five in a row and four in a row, and it ends very quickly.
The starting pitcher is totally broken down, except for Darvish yesterday.
Yeah.
I thought,
the fact is they lost four one-run games at home, and I guess that's the first time that's ever happened in 100 years for a home team to get swept in a four-game series and lose all four games by one run. There was two high-scoring games. There was two low-scoring games. They had a lead in three of the four games, and in the Thursday game, they never had the lead, but they did rally and tie it in the ninth, and then Kimbrell gave it up in the 10th with a home run to Carpenter. They could have won all four games, obviously, and then we'd be singing a completely different tune today because they would be in first place.
There's one little thing per game that they do poorly and the Cardinals do well, it seems. There's a bunt, if there's something, but yesterday clearly the play in center field killed them.
Yeah, and I watched the entire Thursday game, I watched pretty much the entire Friday game, and then they lost both of those, even though, they could have won both of those. They had a lead or were tied late in both. But I didn't get to watch the Saturday or Sunday game. Saturday because I was at a wedding and out of town. Sunday, but was by choice because I had no interest in listening or watching that because they were already out of it.
Yeah.
And then they still blew that game.
Yeah. But, it's hard to say.
And he had no bullpen left, so he had to leave Darvish in there, who was spectacular. But Madden literally had no bullpen. He had no one to throw to. And he said that going into the game, they were worried about the rain because if they get Darvish going for three innings and then and then there's a 2-hour rain delay, then they're screwed because they didn't have anyone else.
Well, the weird part of it was when he finally went to Strope, who he obviously went to because he had nobody else, then the guy looked like a world beater.
Well, he's looked good the last couple outings. But he struggled most of the year. So, they extend Darvish, and he was great. And then in the ninth inning, they ask him to go a complete game, and he couldn't do it. And he was
he could have if the guy had caught the ball.
Well, that's like I said, I didn't see it. I just saw that he gave up the runs.
It was a well hit ball.
They were
to
earned
deep
runs,
center.
Weren't they?
It was a well hit ball to deep center, but maybe the beginning of the warning track. And what's his name? Almora broke in two steps.
Well, Almora is interesting because he used to suck offensively, but he was good defensively. And then this year, he sucks defensively and sucks offensively. And that's tough.
Well, but I mean, he comes in two steps, then he races back, then he does the big jump for it. It goes off his glove, then he falls, so the guy gets a triple. So, and the next guy hit a medium deep fly ball, that would have been two outs. And I think the third next guy they got, I'm not sure, but I mean, he would have had it, but then he makes kind of this crummy play, but then the guy who's doing the color, the color on TV?
Jim Deshays.
Yeah, he goes, the guy's been sitting for 5 hours. You put him out there, it's raining, there's all kinds of stuff that he's not, it's a day that you get used to it if you're out there, but in your first play is a tough chance, and he just didn't get it. He said, but that's what happens when you move people around. He goes, you're out there playing the whole day, he probably makes that catch.
Of course, people are comparing this to 1969. September 1st, 1969, the Cubs were 4.5 up, and then on September 22nd, the Cubs were 4.5 back. September 1, 2019, the Cubs were 3 up. September 22nd, 2019, the Cubs are 7 back.
The difference in 69 was
pretty interesting.
Well, the difference
both were like 10-game swings.
The difference in 69 is, I think, I could be wrong on this, although 69 is still embedded in my brain. I'm going to say the Mets went something like 25-2 or 4 or something in September. I'm not so sure the Cubs lost it as much as the Mets won it. They went through the lineup, the pitching they had. They all had terrific starts. Tommy Agee, who was the aging Sox guy, in center field, all of a sudden had his best 4 months ever. And whoever they had in left field was an absolute world beater. He looked like a Hall of Famer and was never seen or heard from again. I mean, everything possibly could happen well came. it was those guys. It was their time.
The Mets, the 1969 Mets in September went 23-7.
That's pretty darn good.
Pretty darn good month. But in August, they went 21-10, which is also really good. So not only did they have a great September, they had a great August. And,
but they had, they had a pitching lineup. Basically, they went through the lineup 3-4 times, whatever guy went, damn near. And what's his name was in the bullpen? Nolan Ryan. That's how good the lineup was. They had Seaver, Kuzman, who the other two guys were. But, I mean, they're about as good as it gets. And they had, who was the left fielder, Manny? The guy who had, he had an absolute all-pro, all-world year, and then I don't know, he was out of baseball in a couple of years. What the hell was his name? African-American dude. Could do everything. But Tommy Agee all of a sudden came back from the scrap heap and had a master year after the Sox got rid of him.
The Cardinals, by the way, this year, July 16-9, August 18-9, and September, so far, they're 14-8. So they really turned it on the last 3 months after they were a 500 team pretty much April, May, and June.
Explain to me one minute. I don't know if this is in your stat sheet. I'm sure somebody has it somewhere. When's the last time you saw an alleged division leading team, premier team, if you ask the general manager, that in the last four times through the lineup or through the pitching rotation, you know, I'm going to say 70% of the time guys go four innings or less. I've never seen anything like it.
Well, that was by choice, though. They took Hendricks out on Friday after, you know, four and a third or whatever. He wasn't done. I mean, they decided that we were going to treat these as if they're all game sevens of the World Series. And, we're going to, you know, go to the bullpen. And their bullpen as a whole, ERA-wise, has been really good, especially of late. The problem is the back end of the bullpen has been horrible. And, so even when they had leads or were tied late, they still would give it up.
Well, they've managed to develop two or three or four of these young guys that are in the bullpen that are going to be a backbone of the pitching staff for a long time. Those two young kids, both Wicks aren't bad. Who's the other guy, the other young righty?
Kyle Ryan's really good. He's the lefty. They really like him. There's a few guys. I don't know. I mean, the bullpens are so
fluid. There's one young dude. They brought him up. I don't know if he came right from double A or something, but he's a little guy. He throws a shit on the ball. The SP Futures, where are we? We're down, we're up $1.75. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Out. It's Matt Weber on the board with Mr. Hal Snar here in a second. S&P futures are up by $1. They were up like 16 last night, so that has cooled off. NASDAQ futures up 13, and for those that don't keep track of such things, the December contract is now top step. We went off the September's on Friday, so they don't trade anymore. It's a December future now, so no longer the spoos are the SPXs. So there you have it. The Dow future is down 13 over in Europe. DAX down 132. That's a full 1%. FTSE down 39.5%, CAC around down 54. That's a full 1%, so pretty good sell-off in Europe. Asia, not so much. Nikkei up 34, 0.1%. Shanghai down 29, that's a full 1%. Hang Seng down 213, that's a 0.8%. We've got reaction in other places. Oil down 30 cents, 57.79. Brent down 25 cents, that's not worthy. By the way, RBOB gas is 165, so RBOB gas is up maybe 1 cent from when the fiasco about the refinery strike over in, not refinery, but the oil treatment center over in, Saudi ended. It happened by, we don't still know who did it. Or, anyway, RBOB's up 1 cent. I'm gonna say yes to the pump, man, he's gotta be up 40. How does that work necessarily? But it's working if you're one of those guys. Silver up 62 cents, 1846. Gold up 1220. Growth not so good. We got economic problems. Now we're sending troops to Saudi. We got issues. Maybe we got forced traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a really good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways this morning, so that's good news. No issues coming in on the Edens. We do have traffic build up around O'Hare on the Kennedy, Monday morning business traffic, but no issues to report as far as accidents are concerned. Eisenhower and Stevenson looking good. Southside expressways are all quiet. Only crash on the screen right now is on the northwest side of the city, Devon Avenue at Sacramento. There is a crash. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today,
Overcast early, should see some sunshine later, and the rain has finally stopped after it seemingly rained for like 3 days. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 73. Right now it's overcast and 64 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, storms in the area today down in the Valley of the Sun, a high of just 87. Right now it's cloudy and 80. In sports, Bears back in action tonight. Monday Night Football, that's on ESPN. 7:15 kickoff tonight, local time. Bears at the Redskins. Bears battling a couple of injuries. We know that Nichols is out. Pinero, the Bears kicker, is a game-time decision. He has a knee issue, which obviously that isn't good. So they may have to make an emergency roster decision and pick up a kicker.
You got
to
go
for tonight's game. I've never been a strong kicker. I could always, you know, pass and catch and do the other things, but I was never good at kicking, so definitely not me. Eddie Jackson, by the way, is also questionable tonight. Same with Trey Burton, who is looking to make his season debut. The Cardinals lost at home to the Panthers 38-20. Sunday Night Football last night, it was a good one between the Rams and the Browns, and L.A. squeaked out a road win in Cleveland 20-13, stopping the Browns on four straight plays at the end of regulation inside their own five to close that one out. In baseball, it was the Cubs losing to the Cardinals, as we talked about. 3-2 was the final. They were swept at home in the four-game series. They've dropped six in a row and are pretty much out of it now. We'll get into the standings in just a second. White Sox lost to the Tigers 6-3. Diamondbacks lost to the Padres 6-4. So the Cubs, after dropping six in a row, are now 82-74. They're four games behind the wild card leading Nationals and Brewers, who are tied atop the wild card standings. So the Brewers and Nationals are fighting for that top spot. The Cubs are four back. So the Cubs have to win their last six, I would think, here to have any shot at you know, a playoff or some sort of tiebreaker with either the Brewers or the Nationals. And the Mets are just a half game behind the Cubs, and they're in the same sort of scenario.
Turn off the lights.
I would say it's over.
Chief. Hey, how are you, buddy? I'm going to say one more thing about the Cubbies after watching them all weekend. I'm looking for the keepers, Hal.
Yeah.
Castellanos, Rizzo, Schwarber, the shortstop, the new kid. After that, I don't know. Zobrist, maybe. Rest of them, the catcher, I don't know what happens to him every September, Manny, but the guy disappears. He can't be the best catcher in baseball. He doesn't even play. Just saying.
Well, they've had a ton of injuries, all at the coming at the worst time. Hamill's out, Baez out, Russell out, Rizzo and Bryant are playing at 50%. I think Contreras, after that hamstring injury,
Rizzo has had his best 2 weeks.
Well, Rizzo has just been a grinder his whole career. Contreras, after the hamstring injury, he hasn't done anything since he's been back. You know, Kimbrel was out. You know, they've just had all kinds of injuries, which, you know, every team deals with injuries. Christian Yelich is out for the Brewers, so no one's feeling sorry for anybody here. You know, it's just sort of all of it came into play. I would agree with you that there's going to be all kinds of roster changes.
They're going to sign Castellanos?
I doubt it. I think he's going to get a huge payday. I mean, and now the Cubs have Zobrist coming off the books because his four-year deal is up over. So that'll be money, because I doubt they're going to re-sign him heading into age 39, unless he takes some kind of sweetheart deal. But I imagine he'll go to, like, the Yankees or something, where he can be a DH part of the time and kind of fill in here and there. That would make sense to me. But, yeah, there's going to be big-time roster overhaul, and, you know, we'll see who's part of the future.
Well, if they dump Schwarber, he's gotten so much better his last 2 months. It's the biggest jump up in his career than I've seen since he's been here.
I agree. I think Schwarber had an excellent second half of the season, and you know, he's going to hit near 40 home runs. He takes a lot of walks. He's gotten better and better defensively in left field. He's starting to make more contact and going the other way a little bit, which has always been his big issue. And yeah, I think he's still a young player. I think the sky's the limit for him.
So Hal, sorry about that, but we got to do our baseball wrap up on Monday. Hey, I got a question for you as a professor. And some guy who is knows his monetary and Keynesian theory pretty well. So what do you do if you get, like, a couple of, I won't say smart asses, but guys, like, from, on, say, CNBC or Fox Business or something, where you ask them to write up some economic theory, and they totally do it backwards, and then they say, hey, you fossil face old dude, you're just not into modern economic theory. Yours is all wrong. What do you think about that?
Well, I think, like I've said before, I think it's been going on forever. I think the people that show up on those shows like being on the shows, and I think in order to be on those shows, you kind of have to support the system that's presently in place, and that's either twisting your economics to make Republicans happy or twisting your economics to make the Democrats happy. And it's not new. It's been around for 500 years. Instead of Republicans and Democrats, it was kings.
Yeah,
So, I mean, what they're saying was spoke of, you know, 400 or 500 years ago when they would have a glut of goods. The Americans just didn't want to lower the prices. So, it's not new. To me, it's expected. I'm pretty concerned by my Cougs. They had a 30-point lead at halftime and ended up losing to UCLA. So,
did you see that one,
Chief? That one.
Washington State was dominating UCLA at home and then blew it. They were big favorites, too.
I think they went into the locker room and decided to go to the victory party, and UCLA's 87 freshmen and sophomores decided they had enough of getting their butt kicked.
Was it turnovers?
I don't think they're freshmen and sophomores anymore. I'm still recovering from that. So.
Was it turnovers? I mean, it was
turnovers. I think they had three turnovers in a row in the second half, and that led to 21 straight points. And I think once WSU finally got back from their victory party, I think they kind of fell into a panic, and it was embarrassing.
Don't reach for a short sword. We need you.
Oh no, they're 18-year-old kids. I mean, 18 to 22-year-old kids. I mean. They got a 30-point lead. They go into halftime. They come out. They're flat. The other team's fired up. They don't want to be embarrassed anymore. You know, one thing about college football that I cannot stand is all these experts think these kids are like robots that you can turn on and off, and they just think they're these robots. And they don't want to, and football teams during the year don't improve, because if you lose a game in week one or two before you've had a chance to tweak it. Your season's done.
Yeah,
I think
much.
It's really sad. I really do.
Well, especially is when you don't only really have a couple of major. If you're one of the big teams, you only have a few games that really are competitive.
Well, yeah. Like, I mean, let's be honest. Alabama, they schedule bye weeks or an FBS opponent before one of their big games.
Yeah.
That way, they can spread the injuries out over a long period of time, and they don't have to really deal with the injury issue. And honestly, they might have one or two tough home games and maybe one tough road game, because there's 14 teams in the SEC, and they're only playing eight of them. So they're not playing all the best teams.
In one hand, it's probably good that college kids don't have to play 12 serious games. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, obviously, the guys that are getting beaten up, the crummy teams, it's a serious game for them. Right? I mean, if you're the guy from Sidewash State playing Alabama, it's a serious game for you, but it probably isn't for Alabama. Do you happen to know off the top of your head, does Washington and those teams have trouble filling out the whole roster, the 85 scholarships?
I don't think they have a problem at all. I think what's happening on the West Coast is that there's fewer and fewer kids playing football in high school. Yet there's 12 teams tapping that same market. So I think the recruiting pool, all of them recruit out of California, and you got 12 teams instead of 10 trying to get those players out of California. But in California, I think the high school football participation rate is way down compared to what it was.
It doesn't seem to be the same hotbed of talent that it was 30 years ago.
Well, yeah, I think it's you know, parents being concerned about football injuries, parents steering the kids away from football, and I think it's happening more in California than it is in the South. I mean, football in the South is a religion, so.
Well, the reason why I asked was it is in Ohio and Pennsylvania, too. I mean, to a huge extent, but one of my wacko buddies, well, he's not wacko, he's crazed about football, and he likes boxing, too, and what's the full contact stuff. Anyway, but he was telling me that, you know, my buddy's Notre Dame right now, there are a million tweets we get all weekend and darn stuff. And I said, you know, with these other teams, they're just so much better. I'm going to say that Clemson, Alabama, to a certain extent Georgia, are really the top three. They must have figured out how to pay people. and nobody else can get there. Texas can't get there.
Well, I think home field advantage is really important in college football. It's important in the NFL, but it's even more important in college football, especially in a stadium that holds 100,000 people. And I think Notre Dame actually played really well Saturday night because they're not just playing Georgia. They're playing the 100,000 fans that are there. And I think maybe four or five of their drives were ended by a false start penalty or a holding penalty. And the holding penalty comes from the fact that that offensive lineman has to stay in their stance a fraction more to ensure they don't have a false start. Meanwhile, the defensive linemen are just teed off. So
well, yeah,
I think Notre Dame played actually really well. I watched the game, and I thought they were just as good as Georgia. You put that in a neutral field with 50-50 fans, I think Notre Dame has a really good shot of beating them.
Well, I mean, they definitely played up a little bit. But my point is that those guys, I mean, anyway, my Beldo has all these stats, and unless you look at them, you would never. He said Stanford only had 50. This is the end of August. Only had 58 people on scholarship.
Yeah.
And
well, I think at Stanford it's hard to do because they have to meet these really rigid academic requirements.
But, I mean, the Irish were, they got their 85th guy in August.
Yeah.
I mean, they were scrambling to get the last few. Now how much you need the last few, I don't know. You can contrast that to Alabama. Maddie, how many people do you think they gray-shirt every year? 5, 10?
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, so they really have 90 or 95 guys. So it wouldn't surprise me. Unless it's early in the year and nobody's hurt, it would really stun me that Stanford can stay on the field with them. They might, you know, in a bowl game where you have a month of rest or something, where it's only your top 30 or 35 guys. But realistically, how do you do that? How do you have 90 guys? The other guys have 58. Now, granted, I mean, I went to Dr. J's bro Pete. He's pretty close to Pete Carroll, because Pete Carroll was the defensive. I think he was a defensive coordinator in Minnesota when Pete played there. So when Southern Cal played Notre Dame years ago, I went down with Pete and we got to go to the Southern Cal practice. And so essentially all the guys come walking by me, and at the time I'm 6'4". And there's about five or six guys go by me that are like taller. And I go, okay, there's the offensive line and the DNs, right? And then there's probably 30 guys there that you would say are, they look almost like a pro team. Then the rest of the 60 are 6'2", 210-pound, you know, white guys that are fast that never grew. Not all white guys, but I mean, you know what I'm saying? So the bottom 30 are guys that are, I mean, they're only going to get in the end of the game if it's 40 points one way or the other. But I think Alabama and those teams that actually I think can stack, they must, I'm going to say they pay people somehow. They have a whole, the roster just looks different. Yeah, you know, I think. I mean, I don't. I'm going to say that out of the 85 guys on the Irish team, there's 30 guys that'll never see the inside of a game, and I don't think Alabama has that at all. Neither does Clemson right now, and it seems to move around. You know, Urban Meyer always was able to pull that off at Ohio State. I mean, they, one year they lost what, 7 guys at a pro draft, and the next year they were just as good.
Well, I think. The advantage that they have is the fact that, you know, ESPN has contracts with them. I don't think ESPN is the ESPN network. I think ESPN is the SEC network for football and the ACC network for basketball. And when you get their commentators constantly talking about how great they are, where do the kids want to go? I mean, I think they have kind of an unfair advantage in terms of their partnership with ESPN. But, you know, what will be really interesting is to see how this transfer portal transforms college football, because I'm not too sure that you know, the 30 kids that are at the bottom of the roster at these schools are going to want to continue to stay there. They might roll in the transfer portal, and we'll see what I mean. That's basically free market.
What Hal's talking about is one of, and this is what. You know, I'm going to say, Hal, that economists, people, you know, badmouth them because you can't say, okay, this year growth is going to be 3% versus 2.9. Well, yeah, that part I get. But when you start talking about differences in behavior and things over time, I mean, economists are pretty darn good. But I would say that you and I don't know if we discussed this, but Maddie and I sure did years ago. Is you know, when I was in school, it was a long time ago, your college players, to a certain extent, went home and got a job like everybody else in the summer. Now, maybe they had an alumni assisted job, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but still, they pretty much had the summer, I'm going to say, off. Now, as time is going by, the high school kids pretty much report middle of June, maybe, and I don't know, maybe depending on the place. They're essentially an unofficial. They start in school in the summer, which isn't a bad idea. Okay, now if you've got some kid who's not as far along academically, I'll be politically correct, as the normal student body at a place like Duke or Notre Dame or Stanford, you probably would want to get them into a couple of classes, freshman year classes that probably aren't the hardest in the summer to get acclimated. Hey, this is how a paper. You got to write the darn thing. You got to type it. You know, whatever. Well, showing my age, you got to turn the thing and it's got to read right. I mean, you can do those classes in the summer and you can acclimate people, especially if you're going to have some tutoring and all those kinds of things. And maybe they can take one course less in the fall than you had to 40 years ago. All this, I think, is somewhat positive. But now the kid who's a little smarter, he's going to graduate if he's going every summer at the end of his, certainly the first semester senior year and maybe at the end of junior year, right? So if it's at the end of junior year and you've graduated, the transfer portal that Hal's talking about is now you can leave. If you go to grad school somewhere else. Now, Hal, the rule's supposed to be if you go to a school that has a grad school subject that your previous school didn't have, well, nobody enforces that. You see guys going to business school all the time, right? And obviously every school is a business school. But essentially there's now a second tier of recruiting for these seniors is what you're talking about, correct? But all these kids have graduated, which is part of the, as you squeeze a silly putty in one end, you want these kids going there in the summer because you don't remember to go home and losing control of them. They end up graduating a year early and you lose control of them for the last year, correct?
Well, I think the old rule was that once you got your undergraduate degree, you could go, and that's what I think Gardner Minshew did last year. But they have a new transfer portal, and in this new transfer portal, for example, the Oregon Ducks softball team, who was in the College World Series, not this last year, but the previous year, I think they lost like four or five players in a new transfer portal. They didn't graduate, and they didn't finish their four-year degree.
Were they on scholarship? They may not have been.
Yeah, they entered this transfer portal that was opened up last October, I believe, and when they got their new coach, they fled. I think about four or five players fled.
The coach quit, you can leave now.
Yeah, exactly. But I also think that players are, I'm not sure, but I think players are just putting in their name in this transfer portal. Like, for example, Matt Fink, the third-string quarterback at USC who won this weekend, he was considering the transfer portal, and he hadn't graduated yet. But during the summer, he decided to stay.
But he's got
to
sit out.
I think this transfer portal is open to more people than we think.
Well, yeah, but those guys got to sit out a year.
Yeah, they got to sit out a year. I don't think they'll lose eligibility.
No, you don't lose eligibility. Yeah. You got to sit out a year.
Yeah. So Matt was going to leave, but then he decided to stay. Luckily enough, he did, because now he's starting at USC. I mean, they're on the third quarterback.
But it's real hard if you're bumping along. Especially if you're ahead of the game academically, it's kind of hard to go somewhere else and sit out a year.
Well, you know, what I find interesting about college football players that transfer, I don't think regular undergrads can get those kind of benefits. I mean, if you're an undergrad and you transfer from one school to the other, they're not going to be inclined to give you a lot of transfer credit. They want you to take their classes.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, yeah. Gardner Minshew, who's not starting at Jacksonville, that guy's funny, man. I love that dude. But I think you went to four different colleges in four different years.
Well, some places require you. I think I know somebody at DePaul that said you got to take every course in your major. You got to take in DePaul or something.
Yeah, you have a residency requirement if you're just a regular undergrad. You have to take a certain percentage of classes at that school to get your degree at that school. But I don't think that's going on in college football.
When I was in high school, hell. At Marist, they had some guy come in from, well, it used to be Fenger, and then it became Olive Harvey, junior college. And they came in and taught, and allegedly was going to get you college credit. So I get to Notre Dame, but the one time I talked to my counselor, I go, hey, I took these two courses at Marist for college credit. And he goes, He goes, I'll give you credit for him. Congratulations. I go, okay. That was my credit.
Yeah. Take him again.
That was my credit.
I can imagine that conversation.
Like, okay, you got credit. Good for you.
Get a pat on the head with that one, right? You got your pat on the head?
He goes, we're not accepting that here. What are you, out of your mind? I'm like, okay. You got to take something else. You get credit. You know, you get to take something harder. The University of Chicago is the same way. I placed out all of my economics stuff, and I still had to take 20 classes. I just had to took two less in the business school.
Yeah.
You know, so, hey, so what do you make of the new economics? What do you, just out of curiosity, where do you stand on the Keynesian versus monetarist? I'm talking about football to this. When people say that they haven't really gotten any help from Congress, in your history, and obviously you were more of a historian on this than me, that's what you do for a living, has there ever been anything, any pure Keynesian action by a government that was not helped out in at least a little bit by the central bank at the time? Can you ever really separate the two?
Well, you know, the funny thing about Keynes, I've been doing a lot of research on him, and I've come to the conclusion that he didn't really create a new macro. That macro was old.
Adam Smith.
When J.B. Say was writing, or when Richard Cantillon was writing, there were advocates of, you know, basically merchants or members of the king's court that were advocating for the government, which is the king, to take care of what we call, at the time, gluts. And those gluts are just now called recessions. And they were advocating for the same things that politicians today now advocate for, or these economists with these modern economic theories. We'll build some roads, and we'll debase the currency. I mean, that is, it's 500 years old. And Keynes gets credit for inventing this new macro, but to be honest, I think it's been around for at least 500 years.
You know, Keynes was the, I don't know if he was a lead economist, but he was one of the main guys at the Treaty of Versailles. How'd that turn out?
Yeah, and he's the one that wrote the article the article in the Treaty of Versailles that Hitler kept citing. It was the reparations clause, and Keynes wrote it, and then he walks away from the Treaty of Versailles, and then he predicts a Hitler type will arise and create another world war. That's kind of how he got famous, I think, for the most part. But he's the dude that put the article in the Treaty of Versailles that the Germans hated so much.
Well, the
war reparation article.
I don't know if I ever told you, one time we were here, you were in town, right? One of my guys, one of my pals, Sigmundides, like a dog, these old bearer bonds from these old countries. Well, and I knew that, of course, I'm never going to make any money on this, right? But it was intrigued me. Like, it was almost like World War II history. It intrigued me, so I dug into it for the better part of 6 months. And I ended up with a Rolodex of probably 25 names of these wacky people. And I do mean that. All around the world that essentially were in this trade of these bonds, right? And I learned a lot from that there's like another... It was almost like a secondary, like a dark network of cash flying around the world. That's why I wasn't all that surprised to see all these guys in the Trump group that are dealing in this. You know, there's a group of people that kind of work between countries and play off one against the other. I don't know what you want to call them, carpetbaggers or whatever, but there's always been this selling bonds overseas that are bearer bonds. Same thing that's really happened out of China with these dollar-denominated bonds. I mean, none of this ever changes. Because I don't think the government of China, especially if we don't have any kind of a deal, and going to almost like a Cold War, if one of those companies goes under, they're not going to back those people. You're just bleep out of luck. Here, so when we talk about those, you know, trillion or $2 trillion or whatever the number is of dollar and euro-denominated bonds out of China, you know, I look at those things. Well, the ones I was most intrigued on, because I got to know the guy pretty well, he had some of these German bearer bonds from the 20s, and they were, if you read them, you'd sit there and go, holy bleep, Batman, they're supposedly deposited gold in a bank in Germany, and they were really companies backed by the government somehow. And the banks are still there, the companies are still there. So what was happening at the time is the reparations that Keynes had decided that Germany should pay France and England. Okay, so they're paying that, and they don't have the dough. So we're demanding our payment of our World War One debt. So they're essentially taking the money they got from Germany and shoving it to us. And the Germans at the time got permission here. Well, there really was no SEC, but somehow they're selling these bonds on U.S. soil with CUSIP numbers. Or whatever, with there weren't CUSIP numbers at the time, but they essentially were being sold here. All right? And so you didn't have to go to Germany to buy one of these things. You could buy them right here. So they had American citizens buying German bonds. They're turning around and paying England and France. They're turning around and paying our government. And I'm thinking, talk about a circle bleep. I mean, yeah. And so now Hitler comes in and he says, well, those bonds are no good. Same thing I think is going to maybe, hopefully not, happen with some of this Chinese stuff if we don't get along with these guys. And so now all of a sudden, these guys are out of luck. So I'm reading this bond. I'm going, well, the bank's still here. The company's still here. Why is the bond no good? Because Hitler said they're no good. And if you went to the Supreme Court said if you didn't make a claim before 1954, they're no good. What business has our Supreme Court gotten saying those bonds are no good? I mean, what German guys stuff money in their pocket? I mean, why would the Supreme Court ever say that a bond sold in this country is no good?
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah. I mean, but you read the history of some of this stuff. Of course, there's all kinds of Mexican bonds out there. There's Santa Ana this, and they're issued by Santa Ana, and then the current guys go, well, that was Santa Ana, it's not us. Imagine a new president coming in and saying, hey, a 30-year bond you bought under Clinton is no good?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, none of these things have ever traded. And, you know, guys are like, if you take the interest on them, it's like, you know, $40 million or something, some huge number. And somebody's going to say, yeah, one's going to trade. Can you find me one of these? Can you find me one? Then, of course, they got the routine where the routine you had to go through to prove the thing was, then you had to take a picture. The Hal Snar had to be sitting there holding the bond and holding a copy of today's paper so people know that it's a current picture. But it's a bizarre world. But you sit there and you look at this. This is way people get money out of other countries. And now if you look at what's happening, and I'm not accusing the China of being Santa Ana or, you know, one of those guys. There was a Maximilian bond. How long was he there? There was one of those out there. He was there about 2 years before he got wiped out, the French guy.
Wow.
Anyway, so it's been, but now when people go and buy this Chinese bonds, I mean, who do they think is going to back them? If they're buying a dollar denominated, or essentially giving the dollars to some guy in China. Who's going to back those things? I mean, if all of a sudden...
Well, I'd hate to be the last guy to buy them before they crash. I mean, man. I don't know.
And what about this is Baidu? I mean, I'm going to say, hell, that 20 years ago, there's no way that thing is at a New York Stock Exchange. There's no voting rights. There's nothing. Now, Jack Ma is retiring, allegedly. Doesn't Jack Ma have title to all the assets of Baidu? And it's the only thing to reach the... This is out of when I first read part of the spec. Aren't all the shareholders entitled to is the income stream out of Bermuda or someplace? Doesn't Jack?
Yeah,
Ma,
I don't know.
I think
yeah.
Jack Ma has legal title every asset in the place, and he's retiring. Wow. What if he croaks? Then yeah. What? I mean, you couldn't write fiction like this, Al. But it's all the new economics, right?
Well, I don't know if it's new. I think it's just privilege peddling. I mean, I think it's been around. If you don't know history, you probably think it's new, but I don't think it's new. I think it's just the way it's always been, and you know, people want to bow down to the emperor, the king, or whoever is president for these kind of privileges. And I don't think it's new. I think it's just the way the world has worked for 400 or 500 years. It's just gotten more complex, maybe.
So are you now? Our producer, Maddie Weber, is always very disappointed when I mention you can't really invent a new fetish because it's been invented before.
Yeah, I think they've all been invented. Yeah,
so
I think
you
they
think
all
it,
have.
So you
yeah.
think you think every economic scam has already been invented?
I think they have. I mean, if you get into the history and you read about how kings were lobbied, you know, because, you know, we have this Hollywood pushes out this image of a king being this autocrat. But I think that's oversimplified. I think the king had hundreds and maybe 200, 300 people in his court, and he had to have tax collectors, so he gets together with the merchants. The merchants have a monopoly power to sell. A merchant has the sole right to sell something in the kingdom in exchange for the agreement to collect taxes for the king. So the merchants want the king to survive, and because they want the monopoly power, and the king wants the merchants to survive because he wants the taxes. And the same thing with the nobles, the landlord class. They want the king to survive because they need their titles protected by the king, and the king needs the support of the nobles. So I think this idea that these kings were these autocratic dictators, I think it might have been the other way around, seriously. Well, we have this one view of history, right?
Well, I really don't know, what the succession of people into the Oval Office was, you know, in Clinton's time, Bush 1's time, certainly in Eisenhower's time. I know from what I've read that Roosevelt, you know, had people back and forth. I mean, that's how he learned about the country. I mean, there was nowhere near the news or anything. I mean, he had people in there, probably 30 people a day, that would come mm-hmm. in and what's going on in your industry, what's going on in your city, that type of thing. And he had a mind like a steel trap. I mean, that was his shtick. But I've never seen openly. You know, maybe it's because a lot of people don't like him, or maybe because he likes to toot his own horn. It's such a tremendous. I've never seen people currying favors with a president like with this guy.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly, I mean, Boeing has, from a company that was going to get spanked publicly about the Air Force One and the F-35, I mean, where those guys want, they get. I mean, their number one plane's out of production for a year and the stock's barely down. I mean, how can that be?
I mean,
the contract they gave him for the B-52s must be floating the whole ship. I mean, I don't know the economics of that, but all of a sudden GM was going to be no good. Now they managed to be. I mean, I've never seen anything like it, where people go and. I mean, what you're saying is the businesses are supporting him, and he's supporting the businesses, and yet we're talking about really kind of a more of a monopoly cartel fascist system. When I say fascist, I mean if you went to Germany 30 years ago, like I did, yeah. It's three or four companies in every industry with their nose up the ass of government. That's the model.
Well, Murray Rothbard writes about this pretty extensively. He would argue that most of these government agencies are agencies that were intended to force cartelization of industries. And if you look at the FDR administration, he was definitely cultivating cartelized industries, right? So to me, it's just par for the course. It's just how DC works, probably post Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt. So to me, it's not new. It's not surprising. I think this president, it probably seems like this president has more of it going on because his press is probably 95%. They're looking for anything to make him look bad. Whereas the previous president, they weren't looking under any stones, right?
Well, but
Bush, they did.
I agree.
Under Bush, they did.
I would agree with that. And I don't really go with this, press has always been anti-Republican and pro-other. But I will say this, is that, but he's the guy. I mean, without getting too political, but he's the guy who basically ran a whole campaign about how Boeing is ripping the whole country off on the
Well, he was running a campaign about how the Fed was keeping interest rates at zero for Obama, which created a fake economy, right?
Well, but I'm
now
saying
he wants the Fed to do the same thing for him, right?
Well, but what I'm saying is the whole point was that Boeing was ripping people off, and I honestly believe, Hal. I will bash when I want to, I suppose, but I will also congratulate. I'm going to say that out of all the guys I've ever seen as president, the guy who's probably most fearless at going up against somebody is this dude. And yet, he got slapped back by Boeing and by these prescription drug people, like the kid with glasses in the playground. I don't know if anybody can do it. I mean, he doesn't even want to go there anymore. I mean, are these people that powerful? They must be.
Well, I I think there's a, honestly, I'm not trying to float conspiracy theories, but there's a group of people, I think, that are funding these politicians. And I think the reason why Trump gets so much heat is because I think he's less likely to go along with it, whereas Republican and Democrat, they need to go along with it. Yeah. They need to get reelected, right?
I'm gonna lob one out there, Helman. I'll take you to the next step in the conspiracy thing, is that we had kind of a an odd thing that played out here. And I don't know if you listen to the show, and we have Wayne Manson on, and he's kind of was sort of on this stuff. And I always a skeptic like you. But let's just say a few guys that are guests on the show have taken me to the next level.
Oh, man.
And I think I've dragged...
I wish your show was on a little later in the morning, because it's a little too early for us out here in Utah.
Well, I can... But this whole thing with the... If you look at the succession of speakers of the House from Rostenkowski through Hastert.
Mm-hmm.
And Danny, I knew him a little bit, because he came to the CBOE a couple times. And he was from right near my house. He lived, 2 miles away. And Danny was one of these guys. He's a big, huge Polish guy. And he'd get out and he'd walk his dog in the morning. He was this gruff old dude. But he was a guy that you never messed with kind of guy. He was a strong Polish guy from Milwaukee Avenue. I mean, and that's who he was. But he was incredibly clever when it came to politics. Now, whether you like the man's, politics or not, fact is, he ran the thing. If you called his office and you said, I got to talk to Mr. Rostenkowski, I got this issue, blah, 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 they'd say, come to, I think it was Morton's, come to Morton's tonight. He's holding court. There'd be a big, long table. You could sit down. You talk to one of his aides. You may have a chance to say hello. Sit down next to an aide, and there'd be a big, long table, and everybody knew which lobbyist is picking up the tab that night. And you could talk to Dan. I mean, he was right there for you. And he was one of the first guys. And again, I'm not, blowing smoke up his dead behind, but he was the first guys of his own political action committee. Not because he needed it, was for other people. And all of a sudden the guy's out on stamps. Who gives a rat's behind about stamps? I mean, really? So then, I don't know if Newt came in right after him or whatever. So all of a sudden you get this guy, Newt's out, somebody else was going to take the job, and I don't know what happened to him during the process. It was some sort of scandal. All of a sudden Denny Hastert gets in there. And everybody's like, who the hell is Denny Hastert, even though he's from Illinois? And Wayne comes on, and this is after the episode with the kids a years later, that he was the wrestling coach and whatever he was doing. And Wayne goes, oh, yeah, people in Washington knew that, because he would take this junket to Thailand every year. Him and a guy from California. We knew there was something going on there. Why would you go to Thailand every year unless you were into somebody? And, the guy, Danny, gets run out because, like him or not like him, you never could say the guy was crooked. There wasn't his own man. Again, I'm not saying the guy should have been president or anything. The fact is, he was the last of those kinds of guys, in my mind. So now you get this guy in there that obviously somebody's got something on, right? So it's gotten worse than just the money, I think. They got something on you.
Oh, I think so, too. I think,
whoever the theys are.
I don't know if you remember this, but anytime anybody would go on about the NSA and reading emails, the question would always be, are you reading our emails? And they'd always say, no. My question is, are you going to read our emails?
Or could you if you felt like it?
If you wanted to read our emails?
The answer is yes.
Probably. That's the question I wanted to ask, and it was never asked that way. But they'd always say, no, we're not reading anybody's emails. But why are they storing it, right?
Well, why?
Why are they storing it then?
The guys that you dodged when you went through Chicago, meaning the tollway guys, when they went to the the transponder. It was going to say, well, this money, I'm sure it hasn't saved a dime, to be honest with you, but maybe it has.
I doubt it saved any money at all.
So, but I think the deal was they were going to get rid of, now you got to pay in advance, Hal, so there's no chance of them sending you a bill and you saying, I wasn't on that road last April. Fact is, you pay in advance and they take it out, right? So there's no reason to maintain any of the records, really. 3 months, 5 months, maybe. And I think there was something in the bill about, you're supposed to get rid of these things. They never get rid of them. Do you think you could actually, if you were president tomorrow, or governor, and you say, look, the bill says 90 days, And why don't you bleeps destroy this stuff? If you think they'd even do it, or somebody would say, "I'll take it." I'll take.
I don't think they did it at all.
I think they'll take. I'll take a thumb drive home just in case somebody will pay me. They'll know I've got the info. Some divorce attorney will find me. They'll all know where the stuff is, and you know it'll be worth $100,000 every time there's some huge divorce case to find out that you know Hal's going through the toll booth in Huntley every Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock when he's supposed to be at work. I mean, they're in all these cases in court now. There's evidence in these things. Plus, they went off and they got the approval from somebody, because you always got to keep spending money. They actually have towers now off the tollway with the alleged idea that when the tollway gets jammed up, we want to know where everybody's going. So there might actually be a transporter tower for the tollway on, like, Milwaukee Avenue or someplace. I mean, I don't know how do you get these people to stand down when knowledge is power? I mean, I don't know.
I don't think you get them to stand down. I honestly don't. I think once it's in place, it's always in place. I don't think anything comes down. Look at the USDA or the Department of Agriculture. I think it was invented, right, to originally, I think originally the Department of Agriculture was intended to for Woodrow Wilson to impose price controls by buying up surplus, you know, grain and vegetables or whatnot, right? The World War One infrastructure is still in place, and they had massive amounts of milk buying during the 1980s, and they purchased so much milk in the 1980s they didn't know anything to do with. So they had to come up with schemes to get rid of all the dehydrated milk they had purchased to prop up milk prices. So that, all that stuff is still in place. It doesn't go away. It just doesn't. Once it's started, it's going to be there 100 years, maybe.
And you know what? You know, most people, if it's your tax dollars and you prop something up when it got really low, I'm not saying propping it up when there's a, you know, a decent price, but if it's really low and somehow you find a way to ship it to Sudan where people actually got to drink the stuff that are dying of starvation, I'm not so sure people have that big of a bitch with it, to be honest with you, but they're never organized enough to do that.
But there was a problem with giving free milk to poor countries, because what would happen is when we gave this free milk to these poor countries, the local dairy industry would go out of business. The local dairy person would say, well, I can't sell my milk now, so now I got to butcher my cows. So it was like almost making
if you did it improperly. I mean, right? Yeah, I mean, I get it. You know, because no man can do just one thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
the intentions were noble, right? Trying to help starving people, but what you end up doing is you end up putting out a business to people who have goats and cows, and they're milking those goats and cows and selling it locally. If the federal government comes in with really low free milk, who are you going to buy it from? You're going to buy it for free. So what does the local dairy person do? They butcher their goats and butcher their cows, and then they sell that meat. And then when the dehydrated milk has been distributed and it's all gone, you've created a worse problem.
Well, I think what you end up, if you end up with a place where, and you got to use your head. I mean,
yeah.
But if the local production is 40 gallons and there's 5 million people living there, maybe I can't be too worried about the local production.
Yeah. Well, you know, the same thing happened in Haiti, though, too, with the rice. We kept giving Haitians free rice. And, I mean, I applaud the people doing it, but what it ended up causing was widespread unemployment. And the people that were working those rice paddies in Haiti ended up flooding the cities and looking for work, and you saw unemployment rise.
Well, so what do you think the interplay between economics and politics? I mean, it's one of the things that I saw some people, notably Milton Friedman, essentially get booted out of the University of Chicago because he helped Allende down in Chile, or went down there. I don't think he helped them stay in power, but in his theory always was that there was a marriage between economics and politics, which obviously in elections there is, but in terms of if the guy was a tyrant and you could somehow free up the economic system, that the political system would follow and it would become more democratic. And I'd say that the guy's been dead for 25 years, but I'm going to say out of all the things I thought the guy was absolutely right about, he was wrong about that one. I mean, China clearly is not, even though they are, but China is also a if you turn on the economic tap at all, the Chinese people, if you go back, you know, 4,000 years, have always been very resourceful, and they've always been, quote, competitive, and it's always been a market economy. So if you turn the screw, if you loosen the screw even a little bit there, it just pops right back up, right? But now in Russia, how long has it been since the place has been a market economy?
Well, it's, I don't think there was a revolution. I think in Red October, I think you went from one basic dictatorship to a different kind of dictatorship. So I don't think they really had a revolution there. I think it was just a transfer of tyrannical powers.
So are the issues in places like Haiti, in a place, some of the places in Africa where you can't even build a water treatment plant for people without three quarters of your stuff getting stolen and having to pay off the dictator?
Or you have to kick back to the local politician or even the dictator. You have to, there's corruption, there's bribery. And I think a lot of the reasons why these countries don't grow is because our State Department wants stability, so we subsidize these tyrants to be nice to us, right? And so they stay in power, and they learn that they learn from that, and so they take that and they apply it domestically. And I think that's one reason why these countries stay poor.
But how do you?
We're subsidizing dictatorship.
But how do you not do that? I mean, the reason why I'm agreeing with you here, but if I put
honest, I don't know how you stop doing it. I mean, I think there are people who in every culture who want power, and I think the people that rise to positions of power within a city, Lewiston, Idaho's, you don't even go there with their airport, but I think within any local government or national government, there are these people that rise to the top, and I don't think they're the cream of the crop.
Well, the book Bill Simon, I think it was Bill Simon, who was rewrote Time for Truth and a couple other things. But the line I always remember was, "Freedom is not something government gives to people; it's something people take from government." And one of my buddies on the board, still a friend of CBOE. Somehow or another, we were out, on the road, and everybody's having a few cocktails. Imagine that. And it was some place that we were, we're
you get to leave Chicago sometimes?
Oh, we were, yeah. We had board meetings in Washington, New York, a few times a year.
Nice.
So anyway, we would go and we were trying to have like elections someplace in Egypt or some damn place. I don't know where it was. And he goes, what's the point? He goes, there is no tradition of the party that loses becoming the term they use, the loyal opposition.
Yeah.
There's no tradition of if you lose you leave office without shooting people. Because there's none of that in place that really has been, the English, maybe even French tradition that, where how many people lost their lives since the Magna Carta. If you don't have that in place in the education system, how do you just, we're going to have an election tomorrow. What's that for? What if I lose? I leave? Oh, no, I'm not leaving. I don't care if I lose.
Hey, being in the minority party is probably a good gig, right?
Well, I mean,
as long as you kind of go along with the majority, you're probably going to get your portfolio projects, get some stuff off.
Well, right? But what I'm saying is, even as pimply as ours is, I mean, it's still... You can make change clearly on a local level and so forth. I mean, Kevin O'Neill, who's on 2 days a week and good friend, Kevin was part of a group in his little township or whatever the hell it was up in Michigan. They cut some kind of a sweetheart deal with this trash compactor place, and it turns out the thing kind of went public, and they ended up running three or four people against the current group that was the committeeman. And they throw them all out, and all of a sudden, the new people, the budget is balanced. You can do that. You still can do that here.
Yeah.
It's clearly on the local level, and maybe even in a state or some kind of level. But, who knows? Maybe even, on a federal level, I question it because I don't. The one thing I really do believe, Hal, is that the Constitution is probably one of the most incredible documents ever written. The two things that it is, I believe. No, again, I'll be like, what's his name? The judge that died that knew what the founding fathers were thinking. I'm going to say the founding...
Scalia.
Yeah, Scalia. I'm going to say the founding fathers had zero idea that people outside, you know, hundreds of miles away would try and influence local elections. And I think that the Constitution is written with a finiteness to it that you and I could be the biggest crooks on earth, and guess what? In 30 years, we'll be dead, you know, or 40, and life will go on. Corporations never die. I don't think they anticipated that. I don't see how they could have. So, I mean, a corporation is big enough now to really pay off everybody in Congress if they need to. Right? I don't think anybody ever anticipated that an individual would have that kind of power in a Constitution.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, there was a guy that wanted a railroad, and he wanted a land grant. I think he went around. He had a bunch of cash with him, maybe $100,000 in 1865, 1870-ish. And he walked around, and he just bribed, just lately paid members of Congress. And, you know, I think it was the Republicans, right? The Democrats had seceded from the Union, so it was mostly just all Republicans. And he just walked around D.C., just passing out money, and I think he ended up getting his land grant.
Well, you know, it was one of the premier lawyers for railroads.
President Lincoln.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. The matter of fact, one of his cases, the first. Well, we talk about digging one out of the Arnold someplace. the first bridge across the Mississippi River was what railroad?
It was probably the one that went to Utah, right?
No. It was the Rock Island. And within like a year, the thing was up. The barge people didn't want a bridge across the river. They rammed a barge in the river, the thing in that time. And Lincoln was one of the, was the lawyers on that case.
Oh, wow.
But he was a huge railroad guy. He was convinced that if we didn't build the Transcontinental Railroad, that California would become a separate country. And he's the guy who, when you look at your tracks and you see how wide they are, Lincoln made that decision. Because some were five foot width and four feet 8.5 inches, and he picked 4 feet 8.5 inches. So that's our gauge to this day.
Yeah.
And we're probably better off if it would have been five, to be honest with you, because you could carry more. So he made a mistake there. I'll leave you with this one, because I always like to leave you with one. We only got a minute. How much of the U.S. property were given to the fort, just not even including the eastern part of the country, because a lot of it was given there. How much of the physical property in the U.S. was given to the four western railroads, or five, or I think about four or five?
I think it was quite a bit. I mean, they were going to develop the properties all along the railroad from the east coast to the west coast. So I would suspect it's pretty substantial.
It's like 20%.
How much?
20%.
20%, wow.
Matter of fact, the Permian Basin, little you can tell your class this, the Permian Basin, next time you're on, I'll get you a history of this. Permian Basin, the land is owned by a railroad that was never built. Like the Fort Worth and Western. But the land out there, nobody ever wanted it. They gave it to those guys for railroad. The railroad made it like 5 miles out of Fort Worth. They said, screw it, we're not building this railroad. Now they own the oil stuff. So anyway, Hal, you didn't come this way. I got to come out. I got to get myself in shape to do some skiing. Well, I can't ski with you guys. You guys are probably too good. But I'd love to sit in the back.
Oh, I'm not very good.
Can I sit in one of the back of your class with a couple of tomatoes and like winging them?
What's that?
Can I sit in the back of your class with a couple of tomatoes and like wing them?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Come on in. I'll give you the tomatoes.
God, no, you probably would. Hey, thank you very much, buddy. Won't be long. We'll have you back. SP Futures down 1.5. NASDAQ Futures up 2.5. Be right back, Mr. David Andelman.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters. the daily news, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 250, and Nasdaq futures flat. I'm stunned as the Fed has had to do open market activity today in the repo market for the fifth straight day, and they still don't quite understand why banks are not filling the funding gap. Maddie, I'm shocked and appalled by the fact that these guys for the last 7 years have done nothing but send their money to the Fed overnight and gain interest, that they don't have 48 people now whose jobs used to be to watch the federal funds market at night and add stuff as they want. Why would they?
I'm shocked.
Yeah. Yeah, he's exactly right. Dow futures down 37. Over in Europe, we've got sell-offs. DAX down 137, 1.1%. FTSE down 29.4%. But the CAC round down 57. That's 1.02%. In Asia, we got the Nikkei down up 34.1%. Shanghai down 29. That's a full percent. Hang Seng down 213. That's 0.8%. We've got bonds 1.70. The Bund minus 0.57. We've got the Japanese 10 years minus 0.21. We've got oil down 8 cents, call it flat, 58.01, Brent 64.02, so the spread is an easy $6.01, do the math on that. RBOB 166, kind of no reason to pay $2.99 at the pump, but if you're at the pump and you want gas, that's what you're paying, right, Manny? Would you pay in Iowa?
$2.50.
Yeah, I think our guys here are a little quicker to take advantage. Is that a fair statement?
That could be.
Just saying. Silver up 57 cents, 1842. Gold up 1020, 1525. Gold gains on global growth woes. Palladium sets record on supply concerns. Manny, what do you have for us, Trevor? Weather sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a couple of issues to report. Outbound Eisenhower just before Costner Avenue, there is a crash that's causing stop-and-go traffic on I-290, so keep that in mind. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy as far as accidents are concerned, but they are moving slowly. Same could be said for the Stevenson. Southside Expressway is looking okay. Only other crash in the area is on the Tri-State northbound just before Ogden Avenue. There was an earlier crash, and crews are working to get that cleared. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine for the first time in a couple of days. A high of 73, less humid too. Right now it is crystal clear and 65 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, storms in the area down in Phoenix. A high of 87. Right now it's overcast and 81. In sports, Monday Night Football tonight. Bears at the Redskins, 7:15 local time kickoff. Looking forward to that one. Bears are 1-1. The Redskins are 0-2. Sunday Night Football last night, it was the Rams over the Browns, 20-13. Arizona Cardinals lost to the Panthers at home, 38-20. In baseball, Cubs were swept by the Cardinals, pretty much ending their season. They still have a mathematical shot, but they probably need to win their last six games. They lost yesterday 3-2. White Sox were doubled up by the Tigers, 6-3. Diamondbacks lost to the Padres, 6-4. Chief.
Well, they could actually go out to Pittsburgh and sweep, and then look to see what happens on Friday.
Yeah, they're already eliminated by St. Louis, but they got a shot at the wild card. They need the Brewers to start losing and or the Nationals.
When I say go out to see what happens to St. Louis, I mean
they could be resting guys by then, which would be helpful. The Cubs have to sweep Pittsburgh, and they need the Brewers and Nationals to start losing some games. And then, yeah, you hope you get to St. Louis, and they've already clinched the division, and they're resting guys, and you gotta find a way to sweep them.
Yeah, basically on one of these games, it'd have been a lot better, obviously.
Yeah, could have won all four. They had the lead or were tied in all four late and just couldn't get it done.
I'll ask one of my pet peeves. At some point, when a guy throws three innings and he's out, does he really need 4 days rest?
Probably not if he's throwing three innings. No, definitely not. And right. In the playoffs, you wouldn't get it.
No. David, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
What do you make of this fifth day in a row on the Feds? Is it? I'm totally chalking it up to that there has not been a federal funds market for so long with the Fed paying money to these banks. They just ship their money every night to the bank and don't look around for something different. You think I'm totally wrong on that or what?
I wouldn't know. I would guess that you're right, but, you know, what has it been, 5 years or something, 7 years since they've
12.
Done this?
12. This many days in a row, I think it's been 12, or I've heard people, I have no way to check.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. Obviously, I think there's something structurally, you know, wrong that, you know, the overnight market seems a little bit out of control. They're trying to stabilize it and get it in line with targets, but why it's actually happening, I have no idea.
Well, let me ask you this. If, for instance, I mean, I'm not saying I don't know the answer to this, so don't scribble this down. if all of a sudden the drains on the monetary system, in other words, the Treasury going out and borrowing money, which they're doing at an incredible rate because we're up to $1 trillion in 11 months, and the people who say some people have slacked off, I'm not accusing them of this, but say the Chinese and so forth, you could conceivably, you know, go out and all of a sudden you need money in the system. I mean, I guess I
would guess that's, I mean, they attributed, you know, the beginning of it to, you know, some kind of tax issue with corporations paying on the same day or whatever, and they didn't come in or they didn't have it, whatever. But then the other part was a Japanese bank holiday, and they weren't participating in the overnight, and so they ran short.
Right.
So I think what you're alluding to, or I'm guessing, is probably correct.
Well, I was under the impression, David, since I don't really know the bits and pieces of this, although I would love to sit down with somebody at the Fed for 3 days and find out all that happens, but I have my sources there a little bit. But my thought was if you know, David Inc. writes a $100 million corporate income tax check to the government, that it comes out of your account at Chase, that the government has to put it someplace. They put it at Citigroup or whatever, and really it never leaves the system. Now, my guys at the Fed tell me that actually when the Treasury deposits that, it might be they might deposit it like back at the Fed or something, where it actually does come out of the system, that it's not available in the system, like at least that night, or the net, I don't know how long, but at least right. That night. Now, if that's the case, if that happened on the same day or week that they went out last week allegedly for $74 billion of new bonds, and the only amount of people that rolled over was 20, well, there's another 54. So you're starting to talk about a lot of money not available in the system right away. So,
right.
So I'm thinking that's has been what happened. Now, as to why, how long that federal money stays out of the system, I don't know. I thought they would have it in the bank, but maybe they don't. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I'd like to learn more about where exactly would theirs go that it's not counted. I mean, clearly, if I wrote you a $1 million check, you know, it's a big golf bet, right? Be like Michael Jordan golf bet.
I think it'd probably be the other way around. I'd be writing it if it was a golf bet.
Well, whatever. I mean, if it's a Michael Jordan bet, but then the minute you send me the check and I deposit it, it should just go from one to the other. The effect on the system should be neutral, right?
Right.
Somehow or another, from what I understand, the corporate income tax checks are not neutral, at least for the day or week or whatever. At some point, the federal government is going to spend that money, right? Because obviously they spend everything. So it has to re-enter the system at some point. Now, how that all that mechanism works, I'm going to try and find somebody and get them on, because I bet that would be fascinating.
Yeah, it would seem like any more these days, it would be instantaneously, but whatever.
Yeah.
The next day at worst,
yeah, you would
5
think.
Days later, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it would. I mean, where would it go? I mean, you know, there's the money's still someplace, right? I mean,
I don't know.
Hey, so we've got... I was last night when I was kept checking the market and seeing what was going on, and we were up almost the exact amount we were down on Friday. And I'm thinking, I'm going to be talking to David about how we sold off at the end of the day Friday because of the Chinese didn't go to Bozeman. They went home or something. Why they were going to Bozeman.
And you know what? It wasn't a planned thing. It was a last-minute thing. I mean, they had the head of, you know, Agricultural Association in Montana, and she was on, and they said, you know, was this planned before the, you know, trade ministers or trade negotiators came from China? And she said, no. Once they arrived, they thought, you know, well, this will be a good idea because we're talking about, you know, increased purchases, you know, so we'll go to a farm or two in Nebraska, and we'll go to a farm or two in Montana. And so it was literally planned last minute. So you know, the market interpret, and I'm not saying the market's wrong. You know, I don't know the behind the scenes, and you know, I like to presume that the market knows everything. But, you know, the market reacted like, oh, my God, they canceled the visit, and so, you know, that's the end of the negotiations. October negotiations won't happen, you know, blah, 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 blah. Let's sell the market down. And they did. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, it was really kind of a last minute, oh, yeah, let's take a look. And I don't know if anybody actually knows the reason why they canceled. Maybe it was because negotiations weren't going well. Maybe they wanted to get back because they had family matters. Who knows?
Well, I mean, that's why when last night we flipped back essentially the same amount, I was
more.
Thinking the same thing.
The overnight high in the mini S&P was 30.08 and a quarter, which was up 17 handles.
And we were down, what, 15 on Friday?
Yeah.
At 16, something like that. It was right. It was equivalent to a shade more. We were back.
Right.
And I'm thinking, okay, that I went through my head was whatever you just said. The thing was totally overreported on Friday.
Right.
And it ended up being no big deal. But now we're right back to unchanged, so now I don't know what this message is.
I don't know. And suppose, I mean, you know, they tweet, they email, they post, you know, all the sources or whatever, but, you know, supposedly the October negotiations are still on, and they called the negotiations last week, quote-unquote, productive, which, who knows what that means. You know, maybe it's, you know, a guise for nothing happened, or that they didn't go well. You know, who knows? But I don't know, at least net, from what the media reports, and it may be, you know, veiled and disguised or behind. I can't know this, but at least from all the sources that, you know, I've looked at, and writers and, you know, foreign press and whatever, Hong Kong media and everything else, everything was okay, nothing great, nothing terrible, and yet, you know, we gave back, you know, a fair chunk. And we're not getting it back, at least so far.
Dave, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, and again, I think anybody who listens to the show constantly realizes that, I mean, I think in a lot of ways, some of the Chinese way of doing business, I mean, they should be in Local 12. you know, Matty Weber, who's Local 12?
Who's what?
Local 12.
What are you talking about?
Saying the Chinese could be in Local 12. Local 12, when Racking Bullwinkle. Boris Batanoff was the head of Local 12, the Villains, Thieves, and Scoundrels Union.
Yes.
So I mean, you know, so I have no sympathy for that. But I will say this, especially since with the election coming up and the fact that we sometimes look a little bit weak in these negotiations, and in my opinion, and the Chinese are really feeling their oats over there in the South China Sea and a lot of other places. I'm going to say that the chances of us getting an agreement, where they come out and say, we've been bad for 30 years, we admit to stealing intellectual property, we promise never to do it again or else you can spank us, and we're never going to ask for anybody's blueprints, and we're never going to do any of these bad things. I think that has about as much chance as a snowball's chance in hell. I don't think that's ever going to happen. So I don't know what language we're pushing to get in there, whether we're going to try and get, 300 items or 500 items that we think are national defense items or something. We're never going to get, quote, that agreement out of them, because it turns out it has to be an admission. It reminds me, David, I'll be very brief with this. I was on the double secret committee for going through all the rules over on the CBOE. It was like five of us. We've all been floor officials forever. And one of the things we decided to do is we needed a rule against having guns on the trading floor.
That's a good idea.
Well, but of course, this makes it to the board, and you'd have sworn that, you know, we set off a stink bomb. What are you talking about? That implies that we have a problem. Well, we do. Guns all over the place. Well, don't we have people looking at purses? Nobody puts their hand in some lady's purse. Give me a break. Plus, there's guys that have holsters. I mean, we knew that. Well, we can never have this rule go through, because if somebody picks up on it, it's an admission that we have guns on the floor now. Yeah, but we do. Anyway,
right.
That's how naive I was at the time. But then the lawyers dug back, our blessed souls at Schiff Hardin, dug through the city rules, and it turns out that in any public building, you weren't allowed to bring in, like, a loaded weapon or something. We already have a rule. We don't need a rule. And that's how it... But, I mean, the chances of the Chinese admitting to doing this and saying they're never going to do it again, I just don't see it happening, David. I honestly don't.
No, I agree, but that isn't necessarily the... I mean, yeah, that would be the preferred outcome, and I think that's what Trump wants, and I think that's what, you know, Democratic leaders want. And I don't know if I would say never, but, you know, I would say it's many years away, you know, 4, 5, 6 years away, and maybe longer than that, who knows. But I do think that because of the election and because of, you know, dissent, you know, at least in Hong Kong and, you know, perhaps in pockets in China and faltering economy and, you know, this and that and the other, and they have to, you know, inject their own kind of, you know, liquidity to keep their economies, you know, up and reporting percentage gains that they would like, at least to an extent. I think that both sides do need a victory, and whatever that term victory means. I mean, I think it is possible. I mean, Trump admitted that while he would like, you know, a great overall deal and a great encompassing deal, that, you know, he might be open to some kind of an interim, you know, deal, which, you know, could include greater purchases of farm items by China, perhaps, you know, eliminating all the fentanyl exports, you know, that are killing our people. And, you know, in return, perhaps we could say, okay, you know, these 1,142, I'm picking a number artificially, 1,142 items that we've slapped, you know, 10 to 30% tariffs on, we're going to, you know, make them 5% tariffs, and we're going to closely monitor them. And, you know, in return, we want China to reduce our tariffs, you know, from 18 to 5 or disappear. And that would be a quote-unquote interim victory for both sides. The main topics of intellectual property theft and forced transfer and everything that you're alluding to, yeah, it's far off or perhaps never.
Well, if we get more agricultural purchases, are we just going to get back to where they were when this thing all started, with everybody getting their ass kicked in the farm thing in 3 years, and right back where we started from? That'd be a Pyrrhic victory. How's that for a term this hour in the morning?
You know, they're looking for votes. We know that. And yeah, that's a real stupid answer, but, you know, that's the answer.
Well, it is. I mean, but that, so let me get this straight. We're going to force you to buy as much as you did 2 years ago on your own without we ever starting this mess. That'd be special.
Well, no. I get it. But, you know, reduce some of the tariffs that have existed on both sides, you know, forever. Natural gas, fentanyl. I mean, those are issues. It's not just, you know, you're going to buy as many soybeans as you did 2 or 3 years ago. I mean, that's one thing. But, you know, there are other aspects of a quote-unquote victory for both sides, at least, you know, an intermediate deal.
All right, if I'm playing devil's advocate, because, again, everybody knows that I have issues with the way Chinese do business. I mean, I've seen it here at our place. If I'm a Chinese guy, I go, why do we have to stop doing fentanyl? You can't stop your own people from doing it. And, oh, by the way, I don't see you stopping any of the companies here from doing oxycodone. I mean, why should we stop?
I don't know. I think the public uproar here, I don't know what kind of uproar you have in Europe. I would presume that's a fair chunk. You know, would be an influence. Supposedly the top guy, you know, that, you know, runs the show, or 75% of the show in fentanyl in China, supposedly has been arrested and shut down. And that doesn't mean that there's, you know, 5,000 others doing it, but, you know, there's some indications that they would respond to that.
I would love to see it shut down, David, obviously. I sometimes I watch the news and I wonder if it's a dream or a nightmare. This whole weekend, the last week, all we talk about are these vape pens, the vapey things.
Oh, my God.
And I'm sitting here thinking, okay, some, as Carl talked about on Friday, some vitamin E derivative ended up in there that you can use, I guess, on your skin pretty easily, but you're not supposed to inhale it. It turns out it's in there, or something along those lines. I didn't know the chemistry he was talking about. But the idea that now everybody in this country is going to ban these things, they're essentially an alternative to smoking that sort of went awry with this particular chemical in there. We still have not, we're not even close to banning smoking, which, you know, all you do is walk in any hospital in the country and walk in the pulmonary intensive care ward, and all you do is see one smoker after another. I mean, if you were some three-headed little guy sitting on a moon out in space listening to this news, what would you think we're like as people? We're out of our mind.
They can't figure out a way to kill themselves, even though they're going to die anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you listen to this stuff and you're almost like, could that really be us? We have now 40,000 people jumping on a press bandwagon about these vaping sticks. And I'm not saying they're wrong. I mean, if it's got some chemical in there, it's bad. You got to get at least that chemical hell out of there. But for somebody who's using it to quit smoking, I mean, isn't that why he's using it, to quit something that's worse?
Yeah, but I don't know that if that was, and that supposedly is the intention and the like, but, you know, my partner has his grandchildren, and, you know, from 10 to 15, and, you know, even the 10 and 11-year-olds say that 80% of the grammar school and high school kids are vaping and coming down with all kinds of lung issues and whatever. And so, you know, the thing, oh, we're going to get the 30-something or 20-something person off tobacco and into vaping because it's quote-unquote safer. That is not the way it seems to be playing out.
Well, I mean, we're talking about the same people that when my mom said when my, you know, dad went off to war, they give cigarettes to all your military people for free to get everybody hooked. There's never yet been a... Has there been anybody in the tobacco industry who's ever gone to jail?
Yeah, I don't think so.
No, I mean, you know, at some point you... I don't know. So, David, we got huge rallies in silver and gold today. What does that mean?
The silver thing is a shock. Walk in and it's 60 cents higher. I mean, it had given up a lot. The gold had given up a lot. Gone below 1,500. Went literally, if you remember, I walked into your office and I said 1,483, 1,484 front month is absolutely critical. We could go another 60 bucks. That was the low. Did I buy any? No. but that was the low. It held perfectly, and silver did too. And if nothing else, from a technical standpoint, they act awesome. They had a chance to totally break down and give away everything.
I'm curious as to the. Gold obviously is a precious metal. Copper is your workaday metal as you string wire in your house, and industrial. And silver's always been this sort of blend. Well, copper cannot get out of its own way.
No.
And silver now is running up faster than gold. I mean, I'm kind of curious and stunned against it.
I don't know.
That
always was, you know, in the old days when silver was considered more of a precious metal, used more in chips and things like that, leads in motherboards and phones, desktop phones, if we remember what those were, whatever. That you just watch a silver-gold ratio. If silver led, it was you know, positive. If it led on the downside, it was negative. That relationship hasn't been that, you know, clear in recent years, but this is an amazing thing. I don't have an explanation.
How much further? Or you want to sell silver today? We saw some people in it.
I certainly another 20, 30 cents. I would sell it.
What about the gold? I'm thinking I want to hang on to the gold a little bit.
Yeah, I wouldn't. You know, it held perfectly. I would buy gold on $20 breaks, and I'd sell silver on 30, 40 cent rallies.
All right. What about the market here? I mentioned earlier that December is the front month now.
I think 30-20, 30-30, you have to sell it.
And we are where? We're
29.88.
Yeah, the...
2% up, I think you have to sell it. We're in a real choppy situation, and I think we will be until mid-October.
We've had this somewhat rotation. I won't say out of the queues because they haven't really gone down, although the Netflix has been getting its butt kicked. Kind of into the Russell. That keep going, or is this?
I wouldn't trust the Russell. Very interest rate dependent. I don't want to fool around with something that's that intercorrelated with interest rates.
One final question. The absolute dogs of this whole mess, your steel companies, your Cleveland Cliffs, all these kinds of what we consider to be basic industries and the industries that were allegedly going to be helped by this administration. David, how much lower can they go, for God's sake?
I don't know. I would not buy the stock at all. If any of them, U.S. Steel or Nucor, any of them, if you put a gun to my head and said I'm going to bottom fish, I'd either sell out of the money puts or do coverage. I would not touch them nakedly.
But I mean, they're going down like, you know, 10-15% a day. Some of them, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, no, I would not touch them.
We got it. SP Futures up 2.25. NASDAQ Futures up 15. Thank you, David. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
Hey guys,
what's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
A little early. I mean,
I gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.